Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the American shit. Let's go hook him up! I just whipped your ass.
You
take it all away. I'm gonna dog you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is ours to play.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and this is the number one free podcast on all the internet. It's true. It's true. And I'm joined by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Greetings and salutations, Edmund. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And we also got our other co-host on the line, Couture. What's going on, Couture?
Yep.
Well, I guess we could go ahead and jump into our topic since you guys seem to have a whole lot to say as far as chatting. Anyway, since Bound for Glory is this weekend and Kurt Angle is apparently going into the TNA Hall of Fame, we are going to do a show about...
The LOL TNA Hall of Fame.
The what? The Laugh Out Loud Hall of Fame?
The LOL TNA Hall of Fame.
Okay. Well... I'm high right now, so that's a little too complicated for me to say, so I'll let you...
Well, Kurt Angle probably is too, so...
Yeah. No, he's clean, dude. He's got a rehab. But anyway,
yeah.
we will be doing a show about Kurt Angle, and we'll be talking all about Kurt Angle and all his matches and some of his promos and skits and a lot of craziness outside of the ring also. And... you know, it should be a fun show. Kurt Angle is one of my personal favorite wrestlers, even though I don't really watch a whole lot of TNA. When he was in the WWE, he was for a long time, he was my favorite wrestler. And, you know, so I think we can have a nice little show here. What do you guys think?
We'll see what happens.
Okay. Couture?
Yeah, Kurt Angle's one of those guys, you know, he had started wrestling in, what, 1999, I guess, when he made his debut. I'd say he's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Yeah, and he did it in a very short period of time compared to, like, other wrestlers, you know. I mean, he was great within a couple years. And
Like when Owen Hart made his debut, it wasn't long before he was like one of the best wrestlers in the world. And guys like him and, you know, like Great Muta, when he started, he was pretty damn good after being in it for a short while. You know, guys like that.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing with Kurt Angle, though, is like some people think he just like debuted and then just like started like off of his debut, but he actually did dark matches for a very long time, because I remember reading like the what happened at the show, like the dark matches from like the Observer.
Yeah.
Or whatever, and yeah, they kind of played it smart, because they kept them. They had him wrestling guys on the main roster. They had him on the main roster getting used to everything, and they had him do that for, like, the longest time. And I remember, you know, the whole – well, actually, he debuted Didn't he debut? Not really debuted, but he came out a year earlier, didn't he? Doing fucking beating up that fucking Tiger Ali Things kid.
Yeah, they did one of those fans out of the crowd thing, and it was a Kurt Angle. And I can't remember what they did, but I remember him being in it.
Now you're kind of glazing over the fact that he's a an Olympic medalist.
Yeah, that's a
Olympic wrestling doesn't work. Come on.
Yeah, but with that said, think about how he was introduced to wrestling. I was listening to the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast here last week with Joey Styles on it, and he was talking about how Kurt Angle was in the arena the night they decided to quote unquote crucify the Sandman, and so Kurt Angle, being a Catholic man and quasi religious, is introduced to the world of professional wrestling in the ECW arena, and Raven has wrapped barbed wire around the Sandman and put him on a cross that the Sandman has built, because the Sandman is, in fact, a construction worker.
Barbed wire frame. So,
so he, quote-unquote, crucifies the Sandman to the cross and wraps him in barbed wire and then fashions a crown of barbed wire and places it on his head. And Kurt Angle flipped his lid. And unfortunately, as Joey Styles said in this interview, that he was in the way. And Kurt was very upset with Joey and said, "Did you know about this?" And just losing his mind. And that's how he was introduced to professional wrestling. And why he came back, I'll never understand. But he did. And he was an amazing, amazing talent. And still is.
It only gets you so far, it seems,
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice, win the gold medal, but, I don't know how many, really any other opportunities out there afterwards. Maybe for some, I don't.
Well, look at Ronda Rousey. She was pretty much, she was almost living in her car, basically, for a while, after the Olympics, because you're famous for a week or two when you come back, but, basically after that, it's like, unless you're like that, that swimming star, or like the main gymnastics girl, or Usain Bolt or somebody, you're just no one knows who you are or that you're there. I mean, you're 15 minutes of fame basically for like 95% of them, I would say.
Yeah, I was actually watching this episode of each. This Chris Figgen thing never aired on TV. I mean, they showed it on the Rise and Fall of ECW DVD. I think that was the first time it was ever put on anything. And
yeah, it was just a shot. It wasn't like the angle. It was just a shot of it.
Yeah, and they were, they were talking about how everybody flipped out. Although I could see, being Paul Heyman, with this kind of fans there, I could see him thinking it wouldn't be that big of a deal,
True.
Yeah, but Kurt Angle was there. He was he commentated on a match with Taz and Little Guido. Like, they introduced him before the match, and he and Taz kind of jawed back and forth. And Taz said, "Well, you're a great amateur, but I'm a better professional." So it sounded like they were setting something up there. But I don't know, really, I couldn't imagine Kurt Angle working in ECW at that time. It's strange.
Which he ended up later becoming champion of.
He never held the title.
Didn't he held it in WWE version 3.0 or whatever?
No.
Okay, my bad. He was supposed to, wasn't he supposed to wrestle for it?
He was supposed to wrestle for it like in the SummerSlam, and then he got fired.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, my favorite part of the story is he goes after the matches, and he goes and seeks out Paul Lee, and Paul Lee says, "I didn't know anything about it," and he's freaking out, and I can just imagine him doing his Paul Lee thing where he's on his knees begging her, "I swear to you, I knew nothing about this," and somehow convinces Kurt that he knew absolutely nothing about it, and Joey on the interview says, "Yeah, right."
Yeah, I'm not heavily into the religious stuff. I mean, I believe in God and everything, mostly because it makes my parents feel better. But you tell them that. So, but I mean, I don't. Nothing like that's going to offend me, really.
It wouldn't have offended me if I would have seen them do it. I mean, it was probably, you know, but we're used to watching wrestling. I don't think Kurt was, like, you know, the biggest wrestling fan. I think he just went into it just by happenstance.
Religion is one of those things that some people just get weirded out about for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Not saying anybody's wrong for getting weirded out about it, but, you know, it's just people the way they're going to be, so. That's your
and, you know, in my case, I am religious, I guess you would say, and I go to church and things like that, and I'll judge me if you want. Yes, I believe in God. But it's not real. It's pro wrestling. You know what I mean?
I'm more weirded out by the people that get offended that somebody believes in God than people actually believe in God.
Oh, I know. And they're way more vocal. Yeah, I hear you, man.
Anyway. Kurt Angle, he's also one of those guys that I put in the class, like there's a very few people. I put him in the class of, you know, like Shawn Michaels, Flair, Steamboat, Benoit, today Daniel Bryan is a guy that can consistently take anybody and carry him to a good match.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, anybody, or just any type of wrestler, no matter how big,
he's been
elite.
He's been killing himself doing it too, like the last few years in TNA. I mean, he reminds me so much of Terry Funk, you know, and he's a lot younger than Terry Funk.
Just killing himself.
Bad part. Killing himself. Like, I'm sure when you see Kurt Angle walking around, he's not walking around like he's you know, a man his age. I bet he's walking around like he's 60, 70. You know what I mean? Basically, I mean, that's why he has the problems that he has. He's just so fucked up. He has to fucking, or he had to self-medicate, you know. I mean, that's the only way he could go on. The man doesn't know how to wrestle in neutral. He only knows how to fucking go in at the highest gear and just go, even when his body can't go, but he makes his body go, and it just, you know, that's why he's always hurt, you know. It's always... You know, it's just, he's his own worst enemy at this stage of his career, honestly.
When he's in that ring, it's like, he's like you wouldn't know it, you know?
Yeah.
He goes all out.
Yeah, just like, you know, Terry Funk, you know, he basically, beyond the mat, he can barely walk. You know, he almost fell and broke his knees in half, you know, in that one spot. But he gets in the ring, he can still go, and that's like Kurt, just even more so.
I mean, you know, we were hearing the stories like when he signed with TNA, or when he got fired from WWE and was signed with TNA. Like, there were stories of him having to be pushed in wheelchairs around airports to get to his flight.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm. No. I think it was an interview with Edge that I had seen one time where he was talking about how fearful he was of Kurt Angle on his comeback. Because he got so into his matches that you didn't even have to jump for the guy. You know what I mean? He was just clicking on all cylinders.
I think they proved that the other night. You know, when he almost killed Kadarian.
And he just got going so quickly, and it was, you know, it was real to him, if you will. And
he went into
Kevin
Von Erich mode.
And him and Edge, they had that really awesome match, Judgment Day, 2002.
I think it was Backlash.
Okay.
They had
and
two matches.
They had
Backlash was the first match with the awesome punch to the head while he was going for the spear finish.
Okay.
And the next month was the hair match. It was Judgment Day, I believe.
And then they had one really amazing cage match on SmackDown in that same time frame.
Yeah, I think it was like a King of the Ring match or something.
I really loved his stuff with Edge. I think that was just they just clicked. You know what I mean? It just it worked really well. And Edge, you know, unfortunately, he came off worse for wear than Angle did. But yeah, it was, I loved his feud with Edge.
What's funny is, like, you know, going into that feud, Kurt Angle had hair. You know, he had hair for a few.
Right.
He didn't have a lot of hair, but he had hair. And then they go and they do, they copy the famous angle from World Class with the Iceman and Buddy Roberts of the Freebirds, where, you know, he loses his hair and he puts on the, what do you call it, the protection gear that boxers wear, the headgear.
The
Rick
Banner
wig underneath. Yeah, and so he did that for a while. They did that gimmick, you know, where it's like basically the way you think you're going to get a payoff when someone's finally going to pull it off, but by the time they pull it off, the guy is actually growing his hair back. Kurt, on the other hand, I guess he tried to grow his hair back, but it just really just decided not to come back. And basically after that, he's been, you know, pretty much shaved bald, you know, or, you know, since that time. It's just like his hair, just, it never came back. It just said, fuck you, then we're leaving.
Well, Brian and Vinny, over the last few weeks, they've been talking about how Michael Elgin needs to shave his head, which I strongly encourage, by the way. He actually alluded to it on Facebook and or Twitter here last month. And Angle was, his hair was afraid of his face because it was running away. And it was time. It was time.
Yeah, I remember it was a couple of years ago when he started growing it back a little bit. It kind of looked like Randy Couture hairstyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he kept that for a while. So.
Man,
yeah.
I just got dazed on Twitter.
Uh-oh.
I had a tweeted Dave a match that a Naylor had sent me a link to, where it was a Steamboat and Harley race in Japan, and I just jokingly tweeted Dave saying, hey, Harley race is doing the Red Bastien head flying head scissors, which he tried to do. He just, you know, too big to do it, right? And Dave responds, not the Red Bastien head scissors. I just got Dave on Twitter.
Getting Dave to do is on my bucket list. I haven't accomplished it yet.
Yeah, there won't be a lot of now performing live at Cobb's Comedy Club, Dave Meltzer. That's never going to happen. Yeah.
But anyway, like we were talking about Edge and Kurt, and you mentioned them having an awesome cage match. Well, one match that I'll never forget that I saw, I'm pretty sure it was on Raw, was the cage match between Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit, which basically was probably the beginning of the end for both their injuries, as far as them getting, like, the serious injuries in that match, where you had Benoit doing a headbutt off the cage, you had Kurt Angle doing a fucking moonsault off the cage.
I still never and ever am still like this, though. That is God almighty.
They look pretty as can be, though. But if you
didn't
get out of the way.
As early as, like, 2 years ago when I think he had, like, this awesome cage match with Mr. Anderson on pay-per-view or something. They got locked down and he did it off of there. Which, even if Anderson wouldn't have moved, he wouldn't have hit the damn thing.
Right.
Jesus. That's just good.
And when he did it in that Benoit match, I mean, he was so high and just, like, perfect form and just crashed, dude. It was like, God damn.
I think
it was an awesome match. It was an awesome match.
This, when Benoit was out for a year, like with his neck and.
Now, him and Benoit, they had some obviously just phenomenal matches. There was the Mania 17 match.
I was live for that one.
Unreal. Unreal. What a match.
I thought their best match that they ever had was they had a WWE title match at, I think, the Royal Rumble 2003 in Boston. And still, like, one of the best WWF title matches I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the one where, like, Benoit loses, but then he's real slow getting out and he gets the standing ovation from the crowd as he's leaving?
Yeah,
that might have been their best one. I mean, that was fucking badass. The one at the WrestleMania in Houston was badass. That one was really cool because it was different. You know, because it started off like the first few minutes, it's all amateur. And it's, you know, Benoit's pretty good, but you could tell like Kurt was like basically, you know, putting him where he needed to be and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, but it was great, you know, and then just those two guys had some of the best chemistry. Like, you know, people say Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat had, you know, that special chemistry. Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr. back in the day had that special thing. Kobashi and Misawa. Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit had that same thing. They were just perfect, you know. And I bet they didn't even plan that much. I bet they just went out there and just, like, did their thing. I mean, they just were perfect for each other. They're like the perfect opponents for each other.
And I remember the other match stands out with those two guys, except they went against each other as teammates. They had against Edge and Rey Mysterio in the final of that tag team tournament. I think in late 2002. And I think it's the finals match got like 5 stars. So
mm-hmm.
It was one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen.
With Benoit, there was also a 30-minute submission Iron Man match. Backlash 2001. And he also wrestled Benoit. Of course, I'm reading off
the
computer.
I'm
forgetting 2002.
I think.
Oh, the.
It was like one of them was a submission, one of them was a regular match, and the last one was a ladder match or something.
Wasn't it for the medals
yeah.
or something? Wasn't the medals where we're hanging?
Yeah, because.
Or at stake.
Benoit stuffed them down his pants.
Yeah, I remember that.
Something.
That's right. Yeah. Here's a match that I totally forgot about, and I should have blocked it from my memory. But Armageddon 2000, a Hell in the Cell, it was a six-way with Undertaker, Rikishi, Stone Cold, Triple H, and The Rock, and, of course, Kurt Angle.
And Rikishi falling off the cage into the wood chips.
Into a bale of hay.
That was actually pretty cool. That looked awesome.
I just wanted to okay, you're back in the struck up with a bale of hay.
Right. Makes total sense.
All I know is when he was falling down and I knew that truck was there with some hay, I still was scared as shit. Like, either he's going to die or he's going to crush somebody to death.
It was stupid. Like, when, you remember when John Cena put that, put some kind of a card over Wade Barrett and then dumped all the chairs on him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was stupid. What's the point?
The funny thing about that Hell in the Cell match is there was 6 guys in the match, and 5 of them got color. And I was like, that's weird. I wonder why Rikishi's not bleeding. And then he takes this nasty plunge off the top of the cage into a reinforced flatbed with a wading pool in it, I'm assuming. And I was like, oh, well, that makes sense now. Guess he didn't have to gig.
But let's go back like to the early part of Kurt in the WWE, because when he first came in, of course they wanted him to be the clean-cut, all-American, Olympic hero babyface. But because of his style, you know, he's putting on holds, you know, people were kind of turning on him.
They gave him like the all-American vignettes, and I said, this dude's going to get booed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then like, you know, just the way he, you know, he was by this time he was just too clean cut babyface, so that just right there wasn't gonna work as far as, you know, the tide of change where people want the more, you know, Steve Austin badass character. So they start to boo him, and he just decides. Well, I don't know if he decided or if it was the plan, but he goes and gets the microphone, and basically tells, you know, people he's an Olympic champion and not to boo him and stuff. And it just started getting him more and more heat, and just. That just really took off, and that made him, you know, he was just an awesome heel. It's, you know, the clean-cut baby face was just, at this point in time in wrestling, just was the perfect heel now.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. That was at Survivor Series 99. He went up against Meat, Sean Stasiak, in his TV debut. And he started getting booed, and he just grabbed the microphone and said, you did not boo with gold medalists. You did not boo with gold medalists.
Yeah. And then, you know, he had his catchphrase. He had, you know, it's true, it's true. And then he also had his 3 eyes, which I can't think of one of them for, like, right now. But
integrity and intelligence.
hustle
That's
loyalty,
right,
or spectrum.
Right.
My bad.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, when he was doing his promos, you know, with the three eyes and everything, I just loved the shit out of Kurt Angle. He was so awesome. I mean, he was just, you know, you'll hear Dave and Brian bitch, oh, he should have been a badass. Fuck that. I enjoyed everything I saw with Kurt Angle. I wish he wasn't. I'm glad he was as funny as he was, you know. I mean, he entertained the shit out of me.
I could see him either way. I mean, he eventually you buy him as a badass and he doing some comedy stuff, but I was never bothered by that.
He's one of the few guys who can put on a tiny pink little hat and sing Kumbaya and then go to the ring and then you're scared of him.
That's true.
But yeah, and then I mean, just like there's like I remember when he feuded with the Undertaker, when the Undertaker was doing the American Badass gimmick, and he came out in a little scooter, all dressed in white, with a white helmet and a white scarf and a white jacket, and that was fucking awesome. I mean, everything he did was just fantastic.
I remember that was that feud got started. I think it was he got this big victory over somebody, and he's backstage celebrating. He sees they've got all this catering and food at this table, and he's sitting there, he's celebrating, he's throwing all this food up in the air while he's celebrating. He looks behind him, and all this food is falling on Undertaker's motorcycle. He's got milk and stuff all over it. He's like, got this old shit look on his face.
You know, he's the only guy, I remember like back in the day when, you know, the heroes drank milk, and now you got the villain being the big milk drinker and the big baby face being the beer drinker. I mean, that's just so, it's so funny how like opposite everything was at that time.
And then of course we had Stone Cold, you know, having the beer bash every night, and when Stone Cold had his run, he drove a beer truck down to the ring and, you know, beat everybody and got out basically a fire hose and start spraying on the ring. And not to be outdone, but Kurt starts getting ahead of steam, and he drives a milk truck down to the ring and gets out the fire hose, and it's, you know, spraying quote-unquote milk everywhere. And
You're also no-selling what he interrupted with the milk truck, because it was the Alliance in the ring singing "The Wind Beneath the Wind Beneath the Ring," the Stone Cold Steve Austin with Stephanie McMahon leading the thing. You had Tommy Dreamer and Just Incredible singing their ass off. And Lance Storm singing but looking stern. And that was fucking well. And Stone Cold just so happy.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was fantastic. And then he came in with the milk truck. And luckily for him, he didn't almost burn his face off like Stone Cold did when he tried to drink out of the fucking shooting-ass fucking hose that was going, shooting the shit out like a million miles an hour. You know, Kurt did do it, and he almost drowned himself with the milk, but at least he didn't almost really hurt himself like Stone Cold could have.
I thought it was also extremely hysterical when he would get up on the top rope, he would open up two little pints of, you know, milk, he would smash them together and then pour them down his gullet. All the Stone Cold, just tremendous.
Yeah. Trying to think of some of the earlier, it just everything kind of runs together with Kurt. You know, it's kind of hard to go in order and stuff.
Yeah, I hear you. It's you know, when he first came in, you didn't really think a lot of him, but it didn't take him very long to catch on. I mean, it was really freaky how quickly he got the business and how quickly he picked up on things. He's just kind of a, you know,
not just wrestling wise, it's like personality wise too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost hard to pick what he got first, the promo ability or the ring ability. I mean, it just both of them just came so fast.
Yeah, and he was having good matches in the ring. You know, less than a year after he debuted, you know, it was really fast. He was a contender from the get-go, you know.
Yeah.
I remember one of the early moments that he had. Go ahead, Ed. Were you going to say something?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say one of the early memories, that like big moments, was when Taz made his debut at Madison Square Garden at that Royal Rumble. You remember mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
Yeah, Taz is like one match push before they gave up on him.
Yeah.
It was pretty badass, but they've been doing that thing with like the number 13 flashing and the mm-hmm. orange and on some of the TV shows. And you already knew he was coming. And
Yeah,
when this music started, like the place went crazy. It was like the best place to debut somebody at the Garden.
Except for The Rock.
Huh?
Except for The Rock.
Didn't
The Rock debut on pay-per-view at the Garden?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He didn't get as over as you know, that great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, The Rock was great and everything, but I sure hated him from the beginning, and I didn't hate Angle when he came in.
But Rock had that gay-ass haircut. Rocky had that gay-ass haircut and that stupid whatever outfit that he had, the blue one with
you could see the heel in Kurt Angle even when he's smiling and doing all that stuff. You couldn't see that in the Rock at that point, you know, when he first came in. Plus, it's Rocky Johnson's kid. It's just, you know, I think that's what it was, too.
Well, what I was going to bring up was, like, one of my favorite matches with Kurt is the WrestleMania match with Shawn Michaels.
That was one of the best.
Fantastic. And it has one of my favorite spots where, like, he's, you know, Shawn's all beat up, kind of on the ground, and Kurt's, like, right above him just talking shit, and Shawn just pops up, and with no space, I don't know how the fuck he did it, because he was right next to him, fucking just super kicked the shit out of him, and... Yeah, that was fantastic.
That and the end of the Shelton Benjamin match, I think, are the two best super kicks that he ever did.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal.
Yeah, that was a great feud they had. I mean, that was like one of the last dream matches that you'd never seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And since we're talking...
Remember in the build-up, you know, that's when Marty Jannetty came back. He had that great match with Angle.
Marty got hired because of it. Yeah.
He's never seen again.
they hired him and then they realized how fucked up he is and then just let him just disappear.
They realized how great Kurt Angle is, I think.
Yeah.
did you guys see that Breaking Kayfabe trailer with Marty Jannetty?
No.
No.
Okay, don't go watch it.
Okay, I'm not gonna as soon as
it's,
the show's
it's
over.
Depressing. I wouldn't watch that if somebody gave it to me for free.
It was depressing seeing him at WrestleMania this past year. I mean, he just was wandering around the Shimmer Show. He didn't know where he was going. I mean,
being shady too.
Yeah, and then he tried to rip everybody off too at the end. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, what, he's taking stuff off of like merchandise tables or something?
Yeah, he was like just wandering around, just grabbing shit, throwing it in a trash bag. And stuff, and he was all right in his match. You know, he was in like a 8-man match, Chikara, and it was actually enjoyable. But as far as like you know, when outside of that match, you know, like I say, he was just wandering around, like he just didn't look like he was all there. But then again, you could say that about a few people that were there.
Yeah. So my joke is nobody will buy my gimmick, so I'm going to steal these other gimmicks and sell them.
Yeah. Didn't Kurt also beat up Sherry?
Yeah. You remember he came, like he brought her out and he sang the Shawn Michaels theme song?
Well, he changed the word.
Said,
I wish I remembered. That was so awesome.
Or something like that.
Yeah, he was awesome singing that fucking song. Oh, man. Just like, oh, dude. I need to get on YouTube and just go back and watch all this stuff.
I think the first title he won was he won a European title from I think D'Lo Brown and like early 2000. He beat Jericho for the Intercontinental title and proclaimed himself the Eurocontinental champion.
Yeah, that's right.
And then lost both of them. And remember when they had like the two-fall triple threat match with him and Benoit and Jericho at WrestleMania, where like the first fall was for the IC title and the second fall was for the European title, and he lost both of them without getting beat.
That's right.
I thought that was a good deal because it kept him strong, but you know, took title off of him, so he got to do something else. So
yeah,
it was WrestleMania 2000 with the Four Corners ridiculousness in the main event.
With the what?
It was like a Four Corners match, or
yeah, with all the McMahons in the corners.
Yeah. And anyway, yeah, that was a show stealing match that those guys had on that show.
Well, let's talk about a real show-stealing match, and that was his fucking match against Shane O'Mac, where he
broke
his tailbone, and he nearly killed Shane because he was supposed to throw Shane through the breakaway glass, except the breakaway glass went into business for itself and then break away for like three tries, and then finally he just
like
fucking flung the shit out of him.
Yeah. He got so frustrated that he just picked him up and just threw him right through the glass.
I remember he did it, and he hit hard, and then he, like, hit the ground hard.
He did a suplex, and he just, you could see something bad happen. He broke his tailbone.
Yeah. I can't remember what documentary or DVD it was on. It was one of them where, you know, they show him belly-to-bellying Shane through the glass, quote-unquote glass, and Shane, of course, hits it, and then it doesn't break, and he ends up falling straight down onto his head. It's just ridiculous. And Kurt leans over to pick him up, and he thought Shane was out. And he's like, you know, I'm not throwing you again. He's like, throw me again. You know, and Shane, he's a tough son of a gun. And he, like, threw him through the glass, and then, like, they showed, like, the back side of the stage, and he threw him through the glass again, back into the quote-unquote arena. And
he just got like pissed
match.
Off for these glass wasn't working. He just got pissed off and just walking through there.
And didn't he end up going through it as well, like on a on like an Irish whip reversal or something like that?
Not sure. May have.
I can't remember exactly, but I know Shane went through at least three of them.
That was one of those matches where, you know, even though you're like a million miles away sitting and you're on your couch being comfortable just watching it, it still hurts.
Yeah.
You got to give Shane McMahon credit. He let people do a lot of brutal shit to him.
Oh, yeah. He was he's crazy.
Didn't he, like, was he the one doing it, or was he the one getting it, like, there was some electrical, like a ball was getting electrocuted between him and Kane?
Yes. Yeah, they used real electricity, Ed.
He put the things on his nuts. He put the two jumper cables.
He jumper cabled his balls and electrocuted them.
That was Kane, wasn't it?
Yeah, after he power drove Lynn on the stage.
And then mine and Brian's and Vinny's favorite spot of all time, they're wrestling Shane and Kane, and we'll get back to Angle in a minute. But Shane hit a drop kick and just destroyed Kane with it, just hit him both feet right in the face, and Kane basically no-sold it. He picked up Shane and threw a forearm to his back that would have crippled a normal man. You could hear it thunk on the TV, and we laughed and laughed and laughed. And for like months, we would talk about, hey, remember that one time when Kane hit Shane Mac really hard? Yeah, that was awesome. Anyway.
I'm sure it wasn't awesome for Shane.
Probably not.
Drilled him. He just drilled him. It was awesome. that's really cool when you can beat up the boss's son. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure people were cheering backstage around the monitors. You know, I'm sure they did it in the inside, not on the outside, you know, so.
Right.
No one would see him cheering Kane getting killed, but you know they enjoyed it.
I remember when he took that fall off the it was like a SummerSlam against Steve Blackman, took that fall off this, like, the
yes.
Titantron. That was stupid.
Went through the crash pad. The huge gimmick crash pad below it was like a 1,000-foot drop that he dropped an elbow on. Got to be kidding me. Anyway, back to Angle.
Back to, and wouldn't you guys think that as far as, like, main eventers, like, turning back and forth, that when while he was in there, that Angle probably turned back and forth the most?
Him or Big Show?
By now it's Big Show, but at the time, I think. Because he'd be a face for a while, then he'd be a heel again, and it was just back and forth, you know?
Yeah, I thought when he first turned became a babyface in 2001, I thought he got over his babyface huge, and they just turned him back later in the year.
Well, even when he was doing that comedy stuff with Austin, you know, he was the quote-unquote heel, but you couldn't help but love the guy sitting there in a tiny cowboy hat stroking a ukulele. I mean, that stuff's gold.
Mm-hmm.
And him taking off the hat and yelling, yippee-ki-yay. I mean, how can you not fall in love with
That was right after that King of the Ring match, you know, where he broke his tailbone, and that was on the same show. You remember when Booker T made his debut and was supposed to toss Austin onto the, like, the table at ringside, and he kind of missed, and I think he, like, hurt his back real bad, and he had to be out for, like, a month, so they had to figure out something for these two guys to do for, like, the next month so they could both come back. And so that's what they did. They just had them do the comedy stuff about the next month or so.
They were like, they played off each other perfectly. I mean, Stone Cold was just so disgusted when he sang Jimmy Crack Corn, you know.
And speaking of tables, who could ever forget the world's worst pedigree on the table where Hunter jumps and the table collapses and Angle drops an extra, you know, 4 feet to the floor face first.
Angle has bad luck with gimmicks going into business for themselves.
He got a concussion real bad from that, but he came back and
you could tell he had a concussion when they were carrying him, you know, taking them to the back, because he looked like he didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Yeah,
he looked worse than Foley when he came back into Hell in the Cell.
Lucky that was a three-way, so he had two other guys to do stuff while he recovered a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was just brutal. I mean, that table just gave way just by the weight of Hunter jumping off of it, and he came crashing down, and, you know, the lights are on, nobody was home, and he finished the match.
Wasn't this when he was, trying to fuck Stephanie or something?
Oh, they were doing the Stephanie, the kind of like the love triangle with him and Triple H and Stephanie or something like that.
Yeah, they kind of dropped that angle after a while, didn't they?
They had the one pay-per-view match with he and Triple H, and I think Foley was referee. They kind of got dropped.
Yeah, you know, I guess Triple H remembered what happens to all the other fucking times you make someone like Deborah McMichael and Nancy Benoit.
Well, he should have informed Kurt about that.
Because it happened to him.
I see how these guys, if a guy takes your wife, I don't see how you can still work with them. I don't get that. When you want to, I'm sure that they still lay it in, like Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle. You know, Jeff Jarrett took his wife.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see if you guys
the fucking Benoit
Sullivan.
Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan. I mean, that match, they looked like they were fucking trying to kill each other.
I tell you, there's a lady in the man's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the man's gun right here in Baltimore.
Woman in the man's
plus, Kevin Sullivan wrestled that way with everybody pretty much. I mean, I used to watch him destroy those job guys.
I remember him literally beating the shit out of Billy Kidman before he got any kind of a push when he was just a jobber. Yeah.
I love watching Kevin Sullivan. I never cared much for Kevin Sullivan, the wrestler, but I liked his squash matches. They were always good.
Well, then there was the strap match with the I Respect You Booker man. He was beating the crap out of Brian Pillman. He was killing him.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, a little bit off topic, we were talking to Kevin Sullivan. Remember we had Lila Lodge on last year, I think it was. Well, her boyfriend, Dash Venture, is in a little independent promotion here in Washington State. They run the tribal casinos out on the peninsula. Kevin comes out and wrestles those shows, and now Dash is his quote-unquote son, so he is now Dash Venture Sullivan.
Does he what have his real name? Dyslexic?
What is that? What's that?
Is he dyslexic?
No, he is not.
He runs in the family, though, doesn't it? Steve Sullivan?
Yes.
His brother was dyslexic.
I remember now, yes.
And he had he had Ralph, his pet rabbit, that made the big boss man scratch himself all the time, and he lost the match.
Chris Cottrell, the walking wrestling dictionary, everyone. Chris Cottrell.
I know it all.
Great. You do. It's frightening, actually.
I can't know stuff at least something else in life. I got to know wrestling shit at least nothing.
Yeah, people always ask me, they'll say, hey, Craig, how come you know so much about musical trivia and stuff like that? And I always tell them, dude, I didn't pay attention in school. I don't work on cars or anything, so I got to put something up there. So,
if I could take the wrestling knowledge and transfer it over to, like, being a doctor or something, I'd be rolling. Yeah. This is what my friends call it. They say he's the master of the useless knowledge.
I've been called that myself for completely different reasons. Anyway, back to Kurt Angle. I was there live.
I still had a question. What's Dash Venture's real name?
I can't tell you.
It's Scott, right? His first name is
Scott,
right? It's not.
No, it's not. Nope.
I'm confusing because. Never mind. I'm just trying to figure out if I have him on Facebook or not. his name is Steve.
No.
Well, see if you can get Kevin Sullivan on the show.
Yes,
get who?
I will.
Kevin Sullivan on the show.
I reached out to him one time and never heard back from him. But I'll use my powers. Of course, we might have to have Dash on the show first. You know what I mean? You gotta take one for the team before you can get to the corner.
Hey, you gotta play the game. Sometimes you gotta play the game.
Yeah. Anyway. Back to Kurt Angle. I was there live for one of the bouts he had with Brock Lesnar, WrestleMania 19 in Seattle. And the match was
good. You brought Brock Lesnar bad luck, and he almost killed himself.
Well, it could have gone completely the other way, because as you remember, Kurt Angle's neck was really jacked up before that match, and after this match.
He wasn't supposed to be in that match originally. They weren't going to have him do that match.
No,
I think they
were going to
put Benoit in there or something.
They were worried about him really messing up his neck, and he shouldn't have done that match. But he went in there, and oddly enough, Brock's the one that got knocked out.
So it was like almost like the biggest catastrophe in the history of WrestleMania, like in the main event. I mean, that was, you know. Almost killed himself, but I still don't know how he got up to finish the match. He's like
no
a freak or something.
I have no idea. I mean, the way he landed, his head could have literally ripped off.
Yeah.
He's not human. He's a shaved gorilla, dude. They're like stronger than a normal person.
It's like the worst look. I mean, the first time you do that move, like on the big climax of this, like the biggest match you've ever had. It's a move you've done plenty of times before, like on house shows or something, or down in developmental.
When he was in Ohio Valley, we'd pull it off all the time. In fact, him and Shelton Benjamin, their combo was Shelton hitting a moonsault and then Brock coming off the top with the shooting star press.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And hit it hundreds of times. And then he puts it away for, you know, 3-4 years, and he breaks it out at WrestleMania, and he under-rotates right on top of his face.
And I'm talking about, like, Kurt being all fucked up for that match. I mean, I remember there was a lot of controversy because, like, you know, Austin had his procedure. Benoit had the same thing. I think maybe Edge might have had the same thing. I'm not too sure of the order. But then Angle decided to have a different thing that's supposed to be all this much better. And it wasn't that much later that he had to have it done again. And then I think he ended up having to have what everyone else had, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the surgery was highly experimental. He was supposed to get his neck fused, but he went with this other, I don't remember the doctor's name. I know who
it was. Dr. Joe.
Sure. So he gets this other surgery, and I don't know if they took out bone spurs or shaved away bone chips or whatever.
It was like, I think like the way Austin got it, like wherever they made the incision, this procedure was the opposite side. Like if Austin, I don't know if he got it in the front or the back, but then this one was the opposite side. I just don't remember what
side. Yeah, I want to say they went through his throat.
Yeah, he might have.
Yeah, that might be right.
Basically, it was a Band-Aid procedure.
Yeah. Basically, he did have to have it done again, and then, you know,
I think he took, like, some chair shots to the head after that, like, later on, and, like, undid all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's back in 2 months, wasn't he? And he was supposed to be
out here. Yeah, he was back really fast.
Yeah, he pulled a John Cena.
Mm-hmm.
That still floors me. I mean, we know why Kurt came back. He didn't get that procedure done, and then he came back just jacked. I mean, he was jacked. Tell me he wasn't on steroids. And even bigger when he was then busted down to ECW before he finally got fired from the WWE. That guy, if that guy can come back that quickly on the juice, if, in fact, John Cena is completely 100% clean, that guy is a freak of nature. I say.
Yeah.
If.
You know what's funny about this Kurt Angle stuff? Is we're sitting here talking, and, like, WWE, I can remember every significant match he had. I can remember hardly any in TNA. Even though he's had a bunch of awesome matches in TNA.
Yes.
It's hard for me to, you know.
Yeah, we actually
TNA,
glossed
you
over.
Watch it and it goes in one ear and out the other. I don't know what it is.
We actually glossed over him working Eddie Guerrero at WrestleMania 20.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and then didn't Eddie he stole like a bunch of his shit, didn't he? Like his medals and a poster, picture.
He stole his wheelchair and said he's gonna get some hydraulics put on it. Remember when when the Big Show like choke slammed him off something and he like broke his leg or something like that. He was like, hey, they showed a shot of him on the ground and he was like twisted,
yeah,
like in some movie where somebody fell off a building or something like that. And so he had his wheelchair. He's gonna put some hydraulics on the wheelchair.
Eddie Guerrero was absolutely tremendous. I just the things he did, even to this day, just make me smile. You know, when he's in the shower and China and the cat are in there, he just looks at the camera. Two mamacitas are better than one.
Remember when he went to the Playboy Mansion to complain about China because he didn't want his woman in Playboy? And the security guards grab him, and they each grab him by the arm and drag him out, and he's dragging his heels, you know, just like,
yeah,
like out of a movie or something. That guy just won't go. He's dragging his heels across the floor. It's like awful.
I loved him when he would knock out the other guy, and then he would lay down, like to act like he was the one hit with the chair. And then the referee would take forever, so he kind of would keep peeking, you know, peeking and lifting his head up to see, and then have to go back to faking like he was knocked out again. I mean, he was awesome.
And even the finish in this match, you know, of course, Angle was going for the ankle lock the whole time and starts loosening up Eddie's boot. Eddie starts loosening up his boot, and he goes for it again, and he flips out. He flips out of his own shoe, and Angle's standing there holding Eddie's boot. And then they go right to the finish after that. It's just, that's brilliant. Just brilliant. Eddie was the man. I actually did find a few matches from TNA that are worth talking about.
Okay. I want to talk about something else before we get to the matches, because to me this is like, to me, even though he has these three matches in TNA, they don't really register, but his outside the ring activities really do. And there was a time when TNA had this, like, I guess, kind of their version of China. And basically they had this tall, super tall, jacked up black woman. And what the hell was her name? I can't even think of it right now.
It was Raka Khan.
Yeah,
that's
Raka
right.
Khan. So he always had a thing for black women, because don't you remember when he wanted to do bestiality to Booker T's wife, Charmel, in his feud with Booker T? So he's always had his thing for black women, so he hooks up with Raka Khan, and they live together, and the next thing you know, there's like all kinds of crazy shit going on, and it was one troubled relationship.
I think she was more of a whack job than he was.
Yeah, she was crazier than him. And his jungle fever got him in trouble.
The Raka Khan story. She had to autograph all the trading cards that they were doing, the trading card thing, and she had to autograph all of them, and she sent them back autographed, and like they all had like three different types of signatures on them. But she got somebody to help her. She didn't do it herself, and then the card company sent them back, said, we can't use these.
And she must have been something special, because Angle was absolutely hooked on her and got arrested for breaking a trespassing law and violating, what is it?
Restraining order?
Restraining order. Thank you.
Wasn't it like his face, but he was just stupid and left, and then when he came back, that's why?
I don't know, but there was some weird, it was a bunch of weird stories that, I think when it finally came down to it, I think it was more with her than it was with him.
Yeah, like when the news broke, it was like he was the one being the asshole, or he was the one in the wrong. But then when, you know, the story came out and everything, it was she was the one that was batshit crazy than, you know, more than him and stuff. Yeah.
And as you remember, when he was on his way out of WWE, you know, basically WWE wanted to send him to rehab because, you know, he said on Howard Stern he was, you know, taken up to, you know, 60 pills of Vicodin that day. That's what he said on the Howard Stern show. No, that's not true. Anybody who takes 60 Vicodin, even if they're the 5 millimeter or milligram ones, you would be comatose.
I took six of them like 2 weeks ago, and they kicked the shit out of me.
Thank you.
At once?
he had.
The what?
I said you took them at one?
I took six of them, and they kicked the limit to that.
It's only 30 milligrams of Vicodin. That's not a ton. But
I took
a
half. These were the middle ones, so.
Yeah. He gave me a half of a Halcyon when he was working on me one day, and it knocked me for a loop.
Yeah, so when you have the tolerance of one Edmund Laredo, you know, that's something special.
Well, you went and drank after you did like a typical wrestler and went and drank after you took them, right?
No, I didn't drink. I really don't drink except when I'm like out of the city. But there's this old man that, you know, he has a paper route, and I see him like on Saturday nights or Sunday morning because we all have to get there earlier, and he's had some like leg issues, like he recently lost a leg, but the dude likes to turn me on to Vicodin like it's M&Ms, and he'll be like, let me see your hand, so he'll throw me a few, and I'll be like, dude, are you sure you want to give me, oh, let me get a couple more, so he gave me couple weeks ago. He actually hadn't gave me any like in a while, but he gave me like six that Sunday. So I popped three of them, and then when I got home, I popped the other three, and then about an hour later, I just was like, I was out.
He was going to die choking on his own vomit.
No, it wasn't that bad.
Okay, so anyway, I was really disgusted with TNA when he ended up showing up because WWE wanted to send him to rehab. He wouldn't go, and they gave him his release, and he showed up in TNA just weeks after that. And he was absolutely enormous because he was just on the juice and just huge, and it wasn't too long after that he's had three drunk driving arrests now?
It's probably more. I can't think of it. I know at least three, yeah.
I know at least three myself. And then he started wrestling. And here's a list of some of the matches that I have. My favorite one is with Samoa Joe from Final Resolution 2007. That match was an MMA-style match, and it was awesome. It was something completely different.
Are you sure you're not thinking of a lockdown match?
Lockdown 2008, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes, it was something completely different, and it was in the cage. It made money. They made tons of money.
Yeah.
That one time.
Yeah, that one time.
I thought
that
match sucked.
You don't like MMA. But he also had a match with Joe at Final Resolution in 2007 that was also good. He had a very good match with Sting at Bound for Glory 2007. Had a number of great matches with AJ, one from SummerSlam 2008 and also at Hard Justice 2008.
Which AJ?
Slammiversary. Slammiversary. I apologize. There was an S in there. I had a great match at Turning Point with a Pimp. And then he had two matches with one Nigel McGuinness or Desmond Wolfe in 2009. Those were great matches. I absolutely loved watching Nigel work. He's so good. And it's just a shame he's not working anymore. And on this list, the last really good one I can remember is with Jeff Hardy at No Surrender 2010.
Is that the one with the no finish?
I think so.
Yeah, the action was good, but I thought like the booking was horrible.
Yes.
That was when they went to like what a 30-minute draw or something, or 20-minute draw. So they went to an overtime, went to another draw, and five more minutes, and went. And then Kurt Angle got busted open and was bleeding so bad they had to stop the match, and they said we're going to have no winner. Even though you normally in wrestling, when they stuff the match because somebody's bleeding, the other guy wins. That just kind of soured me on that match. Booking was horrible.
The match itself was very good.
That was like back in the day when superstar Billy Graham was the champion and Dusty or Mil Moscatus, bloodied him up and they stopped the match because he was bleeding too much, but he didn't lose the title.
Yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood that either. I say he's bleeding and the other guy's done his job, but whatever.
Yeah. And then, I brought up the other story, so I guess we gotta transition to the other outside story where he ends up getting married again. He marries a stripper named Karen, who's she's put together. Yeah, she reminds me if you ever put it on the Mexican channels when they got some hot Mexican chicks, real thick, tall. Thick legs.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what Karen reminds me of. Like that. Like that's the freaking CMLO girls. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And,
she's
hot. So they were married, and then she ends up hooking up with Jeff Jarrett, and now she's married to Jeff Jarrett, and now Jeff Jarrett's, taking care of Kurt's kids or something, basically.
Well, I think they sure custody or something. I'm not sure.
Apparently they get along very well together, so that's a plus.
It's like when the NFTA married Tully Blanchard's ex-wife and raised his kids.
Fucking know that until Dave said that on the show. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I had known that for a couple of years. But,
the funny too.
And only
did
he make you quit, he took your kids too. Right?
Yeah. No wonder he wanted to kill him that one time when Dusty had to save Magnum with the baseball bat.
Yeah, he should have stuck with Babe Doll anyway.
And then as we, talked about, or not we, but I think what Brian was talking about just a few weeks ago, that Kurt Angle's been in TNA longer than he's been than he was in WWE.
Yeah. He made his WWE debut in 99. He left in 2006.
Right.
So, 2006, and this was 2013,
Yeah.
No longer.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And really, in the end, it probably ended up being better for him to go to TNA, even though people were negative about it at the start,
Right.
Although,
and,
I know he could come back to WWE for the one last run.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he's
Daniel Bryan or something like that.
Oh,
yeah.
That'd be ridiculous. And the funny thing about Angle is he came in, he was totally jacked to the gills. He was obviously on something, strung out on something. He got clean, he got lean, he got really almost skinny. And he was working, feeling better, and then he leaves for this last stint in rehab that WWE sent him to, and he came back just a few weeks ago, back as jacked as ever. I hope he's not on the on the juice again.
I said it's his last. The WWE sent him to rehab.
You know, a lot of people, they picture the WWE as this monster corporation, but they sent their biggest rival, which isn't really that saying that much because they're not really competition. But their biggest rivals, biggest star, they paid for him to go to rehab. I mean,
that's weird.
You can't knock the WWE for that. I mean, that's coolest shit for them to do that because they could have told him no. They could have pulled, like he was, like they told Sonny.
Like a bunch of cheap bastards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't even have real money last night.
They what?
They didn't even have real money last night. That's why AJ drew it back. Because he realized it wasn't real. Or else that hillbilly would have ran off with it.
That looked really, really cheesy.
What else was cheesy was when Bubba and Brooke were. Well, Bubba got in the ring and Brooke was about to get in the ring and she was about to bend over and the fucking cameraman cut away. I was about ready to kill somebody.
Yeah. It's funny how they miss just the simple things. Like, why would you put a close-up in on that briefcase knowing it's full of fake money? That's just dumb.
That's ghetto.
Yeah. That's just a silly mistake. And I... The the way that they brought in Kurt Angle when he was all strung out and on the juice and everything, I thought that was the most classless thing. And then they turn around and then hire Jeff Hardy the same way.
You know what was funny about last night is I only watched like maybe the last one third of Impact. So, but I'm on Twitter and I'm reading, like Missy Hyatt mentioning that she's wearing a Roper, like blouse, like Mrs. Roper from Three's Company, and other people are saying, you know, yeah, that's what you kept bringing on. And then I put it on and I'm like, oh my God, she is wearing a Miss Roper. I'd still do her though, but you know, it was funny.
So how do we?
I want to bring up one other thing about Kurt Angle. One of the best lines I've ever heard was, so they're doing something like every Thanksgiving they do something goofy, and like they had like this Angle family Thanksgiving dinner, and they had all the heels there. I think Awesome Kong, she was just chewing on a big turkey leg, sitting over there by herself. And had all the heels at the table, and he's saying grace, and he said, "And finally, Lord, I want to thank you that Pac-Man Jones is no longer part of our company."
But that was funny, but that was nowhere near as good as when he had the Angle family with him, when he had, like, all his brothers and cousins or whatever. But and then there was one that he was giving a hard time to.
Yeah.
One of the things we do, one of the guys teaming up. I loved him and Edge and Christian together. I thought they were awesome.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was awesome
yeah.
with whoever he worked with. I mean, whoever he was with, he could just be funny, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, I mean, we went through YouTube. I mean, this is a show that you know we kind of just thought of this morning, but this is something we kind of like really would have thought about. We could have added like so many just different little clips of like one-liners from Kurt, you know.
Yeah, we literally pulled this show out of Katrina's keister because we had nothing this morning. We really didn't.
We need to start to stop having these ideas like at the last second. We need to like have team meetings like on Wednesday or something. Figure this shit out, so I don't got to think about it on Thursday night.
Hopefully very early in November we will have a guest on. Kurt Bauer is going to be doing the show pretty soon, so
name's Court,
we'll be able to plan something for him. But yeah, we probably need to get together on Wednesday and see what's going on.
How do you always screw up people's names?
What did I say?
Well, you said Kurt
Bauer.
Kurt Bauer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we had Mickey Whipwreck on the phone, and you called him Mickey.
I did that twice.
You called Joey Daly.
I know. Well, I've always said that. I don't know why. But, yeah.
And Mikey goes, Did you just call me the mouse?
One day we're gonna have Mick Foley. One day we're gonna have Mick Foley on the show, and I'm gonna call him Mike.
Mickey Foley, unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, when we have Court on, when we have Court on, I'll let you introduce him.
Yes, I will. I will take care of that. Now I have to do tons of research on him to figure out who the heck he is. I kid. So, yeah, anyway, this weekend, Kurt Angle is going into the TNA Hall of Fame. So,
I don't know why that makes me laugh.
I hope
who is in the TNA Hall of Fame?
Sting?
Sting, is he the only one? Is Christian in it?
No.
Uh-uh.
He was there.
Christian was supposed to come back and like induct Sting, but they didn't want him or something. Because one of his previous appearances, he was out there and you remember he came to he announced that Sting was like the first inductee, and it was like because Ric Flair let Flair go to the Hall of Fame. And
yes.
that, so this was their, so this is what they allowed, this is what they got back from WWE, and Christian was just like, you've never seen anybody so disinterested or wanting to be someplace else.
You know, I would have, this is how stupid TNA is. They take Christian. I would have like said, give me $1 million so I can pay my wrestlers and catch up on the bills.
Crazy talk. Yeah, he never even appeared on camera, did he?
Yeah, he did appear on camera because Hulk Hogan introduced
him. Okay. Okay. I haven't watched a TNA pay-per-view in a couple years. I'm going to miss
you
this
week. You haven't watched one in a couple of years, a TNA pay-per-view?
Yeah. I don't think so. I think it's been, I know it's a.
I thought you got them along with, like, Brian and Vinny when y'all would watch them or something. Or those
WWEs. It's not worth the hour drive for me to sit through 3 hours of TNA. Just being honest, I don't. Brian will make the drive over here because he's cheap. Apparently, his car gets better gas mileage than shelling out $55. So he'll drive over here, and I'll drive over there. You know, we go back and forth. You know, he'll do one, I'll do one, and Vinny will sometimes do one. And for TNA, I just stay home. I can't see driving up there to be.
I'll be honest. The only reason I get TNA shows is because it's home, and I got nothing better to do on a Sunday.
That's fair. Yeah, if I was completely 100% bored, I might get it, or at least ask Ed where he's watching it. But other than that, I really don't have a lot of interest in it. I'll watch the shows, but
I think they
haven't been doing anything.
I think I've watched more actual TNA pay-per-views than I have Impacts, because it always seems like when I just decide to take a Sunday off and not go into work, it's a TNA pay-per-view. So I'll watch it. But
interesting.
We're talking about
how... I don't
know
why anybody would... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we're talking about how screwed up TNA is and how stupid they are. You know, about a week ago, you had these two awesome dudes from Japan have, like, one of the Match of the Year candidates, and not long before, you know, TNA had both of them, and one was just a guy in a couple X Division matches, and the other guy was being, like, hung and whipped by the Pope, you know? It's like...
Wouldn't he also run around in costume like Kato and the Green Hornet or something?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
They did him like Fritz did the Great Muta when he went to Texas, you know. they had something and didn't use it, you know, didn't know what it was, what it was right in front of them.
I like Bam Bam Bigelow when
he
went to Texas. When Bam Bam was in Texas. And they wouldn't let him do all his shit.
He changed the name to the Russian dude, but he did kind of get a... He wasn't in Texas for very long, but they did push him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but basically, you know, he still ended up doing the job.
Hey, Craig, what we're talking about, do you have that card for the show this Sunday?
I can pull it up.
Okay.
Talk amongst yourselves.
I just found his channel on YouTube. It's got, like, all the Nitro from, like, 96 and 97.
What I want to see is what was you need to like send me a link to the one channel that had all those Raws from the good old days.
Oh yeah, there's another one on here that it has all the Raws from like 98 and 97 and 99, some awesome stuff, including all the pay per views. So this probably will not be up for long.
I need to get on it then.
That's why I like putting all the. That's why I put all the Memphis stuff together on my channel, because nobody knows who owns it, so it ain't gonna get taken down.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, don't like half a dozen people try and claim it. Didn't like one of the guys just die?
Yeah, Corey Macklin died. He was the announcer.
Yeah.
The black guy that was the announcer.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got the lineup for TNA's Bound for Glory 2013. We've got in a pre-show gauntlet match, we have Bad Influence versus Eric Young and Joseph Park versus the Bromans versus Chavo and Hernandez. And whoever wins this match will go against Gunstorm for the tag team champions later on in the show.
You know, speaking of Kurt Angle and speaking of Hernandez, you know, I've run into him a few times at like some of the RCW shows when he's not wrestling on them. And I always like to get behind him and just yell, "Hey, Kurt Angle!" And he always does the same thing. He turns around and he does the Hulk Hogan pose, and he just says, Kurt Angle wishes he looked like this.
Well, I don't know why they're having this match. They just Bad Influence better win this match to get put in a title match. I don't know why it would.
Oh yeah, they have to.
Yeah,
they'll take their pay-per-view a complete star rating down if it's my phone going off. Excuse me for a minute. Only time I forget to unplug the darn phone. So yeah, these guys, they've got to. Yeah, I hear you. So anyway, yeah, these guys have got to win. Otherwise, I can't imagine Joseph Park and Eric Young and the, you know,
the Bromans, the Bromans all the way.
They got some horrible names for these teams.
Gunstorm,
Bromans.
I don't think that's their original real name.
Bad Influence. It sounds like a jobber tag team name.
It kind of does, actually.
Like High Voltage from WCW or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Speaking of Craig, you need to find out who Danielson's publicist is and drop them a line. Because Daniels actually does other shows. I mean, we could actually probably get him.
I know a guy, and I'll talk to him. It's just the one time that I tried to book the Young Bucks. Oh, I let it out. Tried to book the Young Bucks on the show years ago, and I had the biggest headache trying to get those guys on the show. And then they shortly after that got released. And I was dealing with this guy. His name was Steve whatever. And this guy was the biggest a-hole. Unreal. Anyway, getting back to the TNA pay-per-view.
Well, hopefully they'll be out of business soon, so fuck him.
Getting back to the TNA pay-per-view, we also have a Knockouts Championship match with ODB versus Gail Kim versus Brooke.
Okay, any match with Gail Kim and Brooke is just automatically 5 stars just based on hotness. And I just got tweeted by Gail Kim today. I'm so happy. It's like almost one of the greatest days of my life.
I watched the episode, I watched Wedding Impossible. I saw it on YouTube when Gail Kim and Robert Irvine got married. It's pretty good.
They got married on a TV show?
Yes. Yeah, on he does the Dinner Impossible, and so
yeah,
they broke their wedding.
Yeah, I knew he did that, but I didn't know the wedding was actually on TV.
Well, they had the wedding. I think they just built the TV show around it, you know.
Oh, okay.
So.
Yeah.
We then have probably a match stealer, or a card stealer, the Ultimate X match for the X Division title, Aries versus Manic versus Saban in an versus Hardy versus Joe. I had to get Joe in there. I forgot about him.
They better have the strongest. They need to have the strongest cables made by man. They need to have adamantium cables. Or Joe's going to tear them down.
The Ultimate X match for the X Division Championship.
I remember the first time they put Joe in one of these matches. They're building it up, and they're building it up. He was too fast to get the belt.
Right? Wasn't it like the only way to get it off of him or something? Because he was beating everybody at the time.
I suggest because this is when they were pushing him as a killer. I suggest he just tear the whole structure down to get the belt instead of having to crawl up it, go up on those cables.
You know
tear
what's
going
to happen,
down.
Dude? It's going to come down to like Austin. And Jeff, and they're going to be up there, and they're going to be fighting for the X, and the X is going to fall on just is going to drop and fall right in Samoa Joe's hands, and he's going to win.
I remember in one Ultimate X match when the X just kept falling on its own to the mat, and they just called the match off.
That was almost as bad as when Homicide couldn't get out of the cage.
Oh, God.
No, that was bad.
We need to do an LOL TNA show.
That's not a bad show either, actually.
All right. But we got like 4 minutes, so let me show off the plugs real quick. Everyone,
sure.
Check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows at angrymarks.com. You can also download and stream our show at blogtalkradio.com/Catrere and older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me on Twitter and tweet me like Gail Kim and Hardcore Bob Holly did tonight at Ed in San Antonio. And you can follow me on Facebook at Edward Laredo or Ed in San Antonio.
And much like Edmund, you can check me out on Twitter as well. I am at Proper Jam, ProperJam. Do everything wrestling and music related on Twitter. So follow me there.
I'm on Twitter at Katrina35. I just tweeted DC Carter yesterday. So that's the shirt that I saw they were selling. Do you see the DC Land shirt?
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
I tweeted her a couple weeks ago saying I want to see her in her Brazzers video.
Yeah.
Oh,
reminds me of that old Southern song, you know, I wish I was in Dixie. Away.
Away.
Oh, man, you know what? With that, we should just end the show.
Well, there's three more matches to discuss about the pay-per-view.
I haven't put my YouTube.
Go ahead, quick.
YouTube.com/Catrere. There's a bunch of shit up there. Go look at it.
Also on this show, one Kurt Angle is wrestling Bobby Roode.
That should be a good match.
It'll be a great match, actually. And one match.
Good segment on Impact. I give Roode a lot of shit, but he was good with Kurt Angle on Impact last night.
I think Bobby Roode is the man that needs to be called up from the minor leagues to go into the WWE myself. Just me. We also have Magnus versus the Icon Sting. I have a feeling that's not going to be any good. I think Magnus is great. I think Sting, if he has a good night, is good. I hope they can pull that one off. And in the main event, of course, we have the World Heavyweight Championship, AJ Styles versus champion Bully Ray, and I expect this to be very good.
Yeah, that should be. It should be good.
It feels like this.
Well, unless
the
they don't do something
ever.
Stupid at the end.
I feel like this is the last pay-per-view ever. With all
it might be.
Yeah, because I think like in November they're planning like this big taping thing at the Impact Zone to take just a whole shitload of episodes and getting off the road and stuff. So I don't know. Seems like the end is near, even though I don't think it is.
Yeah, we've been saying. I remember Brian calling me up and saying, "Hey, there's this new promotion. They're going to run every Wednesday night. I want you to tape it. I'll come over on Friday night or Saturday. We'll watch it. It's $10 a week. It's only $40 a month. And I'll reimburse you for half, which I have not seen a penny of." He says, "Don't worry. I don't think they'll be in business very long."
And they weren't going to date before Dixie and her family showed up, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
unbelievable.
Before we go, I just remembered something. Next weekend, San Antonio is being invaded by the NWO. Did I tell you all that?
I saw that on your Twitter, actually.
Yeah, like 4/5 of the NWO, well, maybe not that much because there were a lot of guys in it by the end, but basically Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, X-Pac, Scott Norton, Vincent, Buff Bagwell, and Scott Steiner are all going to be at the Alamo City Comic-Con along with Bret Hart and Hernandez.
Hmm. Wow.
That's crazy.
So I'm thinking I'm going to Comic-Con to see them and to take a bunch of pictures
film,
of a bunch
film
of hot
Virgil's table with your phone so we can see how many people are there.
to take a picture with Virgil just out of
And if, give him some money. Jeez, go buy him my hand. I bet.
Yeah,
is he gonna have the same the big poster back to Ted DiBiase with Virgil, but Ted DiBiase ain't there.
And when Contreras says give him money, don't buy anything. Just give him money. He needs
yeah.
it.
Well, I might see, you know, I know some shady people, or I used to know a lot of shady people, so maybe I could drop them a crack rock or something.
That's not nice.
And if I don't see you with...
I'm sure he'd enjoy it more than the money.
If I don't see you in pictures with the Wolfpack symbol and you standing next to members of the NWO, I'm going to be sorely disappointed.
Yeah, me too, so hopefully I'll have a grand time at WrestleCon, at Alamo CityCon. But any parting words before we go, Craig?
No, I hope everybody has a great weekend, man.
Cool. Contreras, do you have any parting words?
Lemon, rock and roll is king.
Okay. So everybody come back next week. We will hopefully have something to talk about, or maybe even have a guest or whatever.
Oh, we do.
We do Craig's topic next week.
Oh, we're doing my topic next week.
Yeah.
Oh, the mascots? Are we doing mascots or little people?
No.
I wasn't quite clear. I was high when I read that and half asleep.
Animals and mascots, that includes all the animals and stuff, so we can talk about Damien and Frankie and all that shit.
Matilda, the midget blue monkey, just any kind of second that somebody brings to the ring. I don't even know what they called Ricky Steamboat's wizard to be brought to the ring.
It was Ricky Steamboat's baby alligator with the rope tied around his snout.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about all the ridiculous seconds that wrestlers have used around the years and talk about Andre the Giant being terrified of Damien and things like that. So
when Damien became Andre the Giant's necktie, when
that's
he got
right.
pulse on his throat.
Oh. So check that out next week.
Nikolai Volkoff gave Matilda a big bowl of water before a match, and she pissed in the ring and got banned from the arena.
Now, speaking of mascots, before we go, who else is loving this gimmick angle with
El
Torito and Renee Young?
Well, that's why I
brought something
it
on
up.
The way on the app on the website or something.
Yeah. Well, even on like the pay per view, like the last pay per view, like on the pre show, didn't he like try to like to molest her?
I don't know. I didn't watch the pre show.
For lack of a better term, sure.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll be back with that next week. So I'm going to go ahead and end the show with this since it came up earlier.
I tell you, there's a lady in the man's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the man's john right here in Baltimore.